So the Alter Rebbe says, the primary thought that is helpful in this issue that the Beinoni produces in his mind is one thing. This activity is going to bring me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or is going to distance me from Hashem. What? Tell me. It's going to distance me. I do not want to sever my relationship with Hashem. I want to be connected with Hashem. And what connects me with Hashem is not engaging in this lust, because this is going to distance me from Him. Rather, it's an engaging in something which is an expression of His will and wisdom, which is connected to Torah and Mitzvahs. But why do I have that will? Where does that come? Do I really have that will? So the Alter Rebbe says, think for a moment who you are. Do I really have that will? What do I care if I'm separated from Hashem? What's going to happen? This is a taiva. It's more powerful. No? This is what you want. There's someone that's telling me I shouldn't be connected, disconnected from Hashem. Why not? So the Alter Rebbe says, one moment. Think who you are. Look at what a Jew is. And he gives the scenario of a kal shebekala. Because over here, there are no ways, other ways to explain it. Kal shebekala means a Jew who's unworthy. Kal, gleichgiltig. What? Lightheaded. A kal shebekala means, literally, the literal translation, not only the simpleton. A lightheaded person. But a kal shebekala means, among lightheaded people, he is the most lightheaded person. And that means, first and foremost, careless. Lightheaded doesn't mean he's evil, has murderous instincts, negative self. Just lightheaded, doesn't really care. And that's a very, when it comes to a taiva, that would seem the most powerful weapon that doesn't allow a person to prevent himself from doing that taiva. If you're a kosher, if you're a serious person, but you're an egotist, you're selfish, you're wicked, but you're dealing with a seriousness, so everything is calculated. Lightheadedness means that you really don't care. So, visa staten gate, as we say, visa lastig, whatever happens, happens. So, take this kosher become a Jew who really doesn't care about anything. He lives his life based on the spirit of the moment, whatever brings him instant gratification, and so on and so forth. What type of commitment does he have to Torah mitzvahs? Not much, to put it mildly. Take this type of Jew. When it comes to a situation where he or she is confronted with the choice of taking their Jewishness and throwing it away, denouncing their relationship to the Jewish people, ridding themselves from a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people, or death. Throughout history, we have seen that in majority of the cases, not all, but in most of the cases, you had Jews who were kalim shebekalim. Kalim shebekalim means Jews who all their life didn't care much about a mitzvah, about Torah. They were totally careless. When it came to this point of choosing between death and denouncing their Jewishness, denouncing the very fact that I'm a Jew and I belong to the Jewish people, they chose death. And they were ready to suffer the most barbaric tortures in the hands of their cruel enemies, at least not to denounce their Jewishness. And the question is gewalt. Mele, if you're dealing with a scholar who devoted 70 years for Torah, Mele, if you're dealing with a pious Jew who demonstrated his whole life his commitment to religion, to spirituality, to godliness, we can understand a person who's ready to give his life for a dear ideal, for something that is precious to me, for something that I believe in, for something that I want to demonstrate its truth, its validity. But you're dealing with a kal shebekalim, a person who all his life was scoffing, was careless, was taka careless, not a joke, taka careless. And this is death versus life. The most powerful thing. Why doesn't this carelessness play a role here? The answer is, because every Jew is essentially connected to Hashem. and at the deepest part of his personality is this relationship. The Alter Rebbe actually once said in Yiddish, I'll say it in Yiddish and then translate it, the author of the Tanya, Ayid nishter vil u nishter ken sein abgeschät von Alakus. A Jew, nor he wants, nor can he be separated from godliness. That is who the eye of the Jew is. A Jew essentially, not by choice, not as a result of learning or observance, essentially, he and Hashem are one on a very deep level. There is a level in the Jew's personality, the quintessence of the Jew, where there's total fusion between him and Hashem, or in the terminology used there, an ahava mesoteris, a love, a bonding. So he can be a kal shebekalim as much as he wants. When they come to the Jew and they say, I want you to denounce your Jewishness. I want you to say that you're not Jewish anymore. In other words, we want you to separate from Hashem. Or we're going to kill you. It's not an issue of contemplation, of meditation. This is who I am. This is who I am. The Jew almost can't do anything else. This is who I am. I am connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he chooses death. This is a theme that Alter Rebbe develops in a very elaborate manner in later chapters, 18, 19, and then in the following chapters, 25. But this is very important for this meditation, so to speak, this very brief and concise meditation that the Beinoni has when this taiva emerges in his heart. The Beinoni remembers who he is. And he remembers that the Kal Shebekalim is ready to die for it. Is ready to give his life for this. And I'm certainly part of the Jewish people. I'm not different than this Kal Shebekalim. The question is, the Kal Shebekalim always sins. Yeah? It's only at those moments that he gives his life. So this is the difference Alter Rebbe distinguishes between all sins and one denouncing his Jewishness in a blatant way. When the Kal Shebekalim, when that light-headed human being goes ahead and engages in a sin, you know why he does it? Because he feels that he still remains a Jew. That he still remains absolutely connected. If he would realize that through this he is severing his relationship, he would never do it. In addition to that, he often forgets that love. He's unaware of it. He's unaware of that bond. Something has to happen to bring it to the fore. So the Beinoni thinks, but I don't want to be such a fool. I don't want to deny this truth. I'm not going to deny this truth, and therefore I will not engage in this lust. And the point being here is as follows. Every taiva has a price. Every taiva has a price. Let's be honest. If you have a very strong lust towards something that's unhealthy, but you really want it, in an intimate issue, okay? And someone tells you, listen, if you go ahead and you act upon this lust, it's perfectly fine. But you are going to have to pay $100,000 for it. Would you do it? No. Huh? Could you imagine a meshugana that would do it? No. Well, a person who has maybe, who owns $1 billion and it's a real powerful lust, you could do it. For a dollar, you would do it? Not even for a dollar?
No.
No. If you would have to pay a dollar.
Oh, if I have to pay a dollar.
Of course, right? It's nothing. So you see how a taiva works. You see how a taiva works. A dollar will do it if I just have to pay a dollar. Big deal. It's like in yeshiva, if we would come late 10 minutes, so the principal would give a $5 knas. You have to pay $5. So those boys that were better off than others, a guy once told me, it pays for me to sleep the extra half an hour and pay $5 for it. So for him, the principal made it $100. He said, that doesn't pay anymore. It doesn't pay. A taiva you can buy and you can sell. You can buy. You want it. Of course I want it. But I want more to live. The will to live, and I'm going to have to pay for every taiva $100,000. It doesn't pay anymore. It's going to destroy my whole life. It doesn't pay. This gratification doesn't pay for the wage that I'm going to have to give up. Says the Alter Rebbe, You're not ready to pay for a tithe of $100,000, but you're ready to sever your Jewishness. You're ready to sever your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it would come an issue of life and death, and someone would ask you to denounce it, you're ready to choose death. Life is the most precious thing, because this is who you are. This is essentially who the Jew is. This is the very same scenario. Yeah, it's a little small craving. It's in your own bedroom. No one is looking. No one. But this is what's happening. You are engaging your life in an activity which is antithetical to the divine blueprint, which is antithetical to the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You are taking yourself and placing yourself in a in a domain, in a realm of klipa, of sitra achra, of the other side. Does it pay? Does it pay the gratification, as the heart says, the alleviation of this moment of depression? Does it pay? Absolutely not. A good question. Why does Hashem care if you satisfy his taiva? Was vergintenisht, huh? Vergintenisht, well, what bothers him if a person is happy? What does he care if you do your little taiva? Because ultimately you're not really happy. That's what you're answering. He wants you to fulfill. The answer to your question is, he does want you to fulfill your taiva. He does. But he wants you to fulfill your real taivas. He wants you to fulfill what you really want, not what you don't really want. He wants you to live a life which is an exercise with who you really are. He does not want you to live a life based on the instantaneous temptations of your life, which lack any depth, any absoluteness, any real reality. He does not want that one's life should be nothing but a connection to the shell of reality. He doesn't want you to enjoy the peel of the watermelon. He wants you to dig into the watermelon itself. He doesn't want a person should live his whole life based on his shell, only touching and tapping into his animal soul. Get deeper, live with your godly soul. It's a whole other life. That's who you are, that's the essence, that's the truth. So that's what it's all about. My friends here gave me a publication of Bas Ayin where they translated one of a beautiful sefer of Reb Kleinemus Kalman of Piasetzna. He's known as the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto. He died in the ghetto. And he has a private diary, a journal. It's called Save Zeros, where he discusses his own spiritual challenges and journeys. It was translated in a book called Healing of the Soul. So he writes there, he says that people underestimate the power of a sin that they do in their own bedroom to themselves. Very often we think like this: if I'm going to do something negative which is going to harm you, it's going to make you lose money, it's going to make you lose your job, whatever, then I won't do it. But if I'm doing a little taiva, it's not harming anyone in the world. It's true, it's just harming me. I'm just doing other. What's the big deal? But nothing is happening. He says, that's a mistake. You're pushed abusing your own soul. Don't underestimate your soul. Don't take your soul and treat it like a piece of garbage. Would you take your finger and put it in fire and say, I'm just abusing my finger? Well, your finger's a precious thing. Leave it alone. Your soul is a prayer. What are you taking your soul and treating it like it would be nothing, like it would be garbage, like it would be a criminal? You have a holy, godly soul within you. That is the most deepest and true part of yourself. When you're sinning, you might be the only one, but you're taking your soul and torturing it. And we often don't feel it. That's part of this husk of the Nefesh HaBahamas. But the soul will feel it and it will release its voices. Not today, tomorrow. Not tomorrow, next week, in a year. Because you can't get rid of it. That's the true part of a person. Why doesn't Hashem show us that we have this?
No, the consequences of what will happen is so in the soul level.
Who does he show us? Why doesn't Hashem show us? Well, I think we see it constantly. I mean, You see, constantly, a person does not nourish his soul like he nourishes his body. He can never be truly happy and content. That's how it is. But listen, Hashem did this all because he wants we should work it out. He can do everything. I mean, he could have just created people with godly souls and that's it. Oh, live a happy life. He creates a life where there is a dichotomy between an external reality and an internal reality. And he wants a person to create harmony and synthesize the internal reality with the external reality. The soul and the body. The godly soul and the egotistical soul. The energy and the matter. The Baal Shem Tov once said, this is what the words of the Baal Shem Tov. Hashem created the world in a way that he took energy and he transformed the energy into matter. And the purpose is that a human being should take matter and transform it back into energy. It all begins with energy. And that energy he transformed into matter. We are confronted with the matter. Take the matter and get back to the energy. But now a greater achievement has happened. Because before the world was created, there was no matter, it was just energy. And now what happens is the human being creates the synthesis, the integration between the energy and the matter. Between the inner self and the outer self. So now, back to the Beinoni. This is what the Alter Rebbe says. Every person can be and therefore should be. If you would tell the Beinoni, no more temptations, no more evil, it's not talking to us. Not talking to us. If you tell a person, you have to become morally perfected. Don't desire anything that's antithetical to the divine will. It's not happening. It's a nice fantasy, it's beautiful, it's an illusion. A tzaddik is extraordinary. But it's not the real human condition. The real human condition is wrought by a split, by a dichotomy. The Beinoni is something else, the Alter Rebbe says. He's not mayis bara, he's not abhorred by evil. He can entertain the idea, he can entertain the temptation. Willingly, happily, joyously. Today, tomorrow, after tomorrow, for all of his life. 70, 80, 90, 100 years, whatever it may be. The issue is step two. The temptation rises, now what happens? The Beinoni doesn't allow to live life based on temptations, based on an external sensation. Let's reflect a moment. The taiva is burning in your heart. The Beinoni says, good, burn for one more moment. Let's reflect upon this. I am now going to engage in something which is antithetical to the divine will, which is antithetical to my true self, which I'm ready to die for. And this is what I'm going to be doing now. Does the taiva pay? No. Goodbye, Charlie. I'll meet you tomorrow. And he thinks about something else. And you are a master of that. As powerful as the lev is, mayach shalat lalev. What is the mayach? What is the thought of the mayach? So he gives exactly what the mayach can think about. When a Jew gets in touch with his Yiddishkeit, with his Jewishness, with the Jew that's in him, then no taiva in the world, as powerful as it may be, and you don't feel like you want to not be a behemoth, you do feel like you want to be a behemoth. You get in touch with the Jewishness which is in you. So the Alter Rebbe says, at every moment of your life, at every fork in the road, you can be a behemoth. Literally, constantly. That's the mystique power of the behemoth. Doesn't rid himself from evil, but never allows the negativity to dominate and to control his life. He's always in touch with an awareness which allows him to control and to live in his life in a manner which is an exercise of harmony with the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The soul energy that could be channeled, which is surrounded by the human system. And it's very difficult for some people to say, I'm not going to recognize it, I'm not going to be participating in it, it will not control me. And so all of us who are trained or are getting training to be in the Torah system,
yeah,
we have to heal this society. We need a Torah healing society. Do you have any suggestions on that?
He's saying that it's very easy to talk about transferring one's perceptions and priorities from the worldly secular system to a Torah spiritual system, as described here in the Tanya, but by us living in the world, we can't just escape it, and we have to have ideas how to infiltrate the world system as well. Huh?
That's really the question.
Are you suggesting that those of us who have been exposed to Torah knowledge, some of it, that we can make a Torah society, make a heal the society?
Am I suggesting that those of us that have been exposed to Torah knowledge can heal the society? Not only am I suggesting it, but the society is eager for this. The society and humanity is eager to be given and granted a blueprint that will allow them to heal their souls and their bodies. The youth, teenagers, older people, younger people, everyone is eager to be given a blueprint that will allow them to heal their souls, to maximize their potentials. The uniqueness of the Tanya is not just that Alter Rebbe gives us an inspirational insight on the Parshas HaShavua. That's beautiful. But that's not the uniqueness of the Tanya. The uniqueness is that Alter Rebbe creates and weaves a unified, comprehensive tapestry that gives a person a very comprehensive program for life, articulating the essence of his reality, the essence of his being, his function and mission and purpose on earth. So it grants a person the ability to see things from a deeper perspective, to get in touch with the more real, deeper part of himself, and to live a life which is consistent with that. And I believe that people welcome that. Everyone welcomes that. I just want to say that there's a story told about a student of Reb Dov Ber, the Maggid of Mizrich, who was the Rebbe of the Alter Rebbe. And the student came to him and said, "Rebbe, as you put it," he says, "the spiritual system sounds very beautiful, but ultimately I'm part of the world system. And how do I do this? How do I gain control over my life? The temptations come and they just overwhelm you. Those initial responses immediately dominate our life. How can I live a life full of awareness, full of recognition of what I'm doing, what I'm not doing? How? I understand that I have to, but how?" So Reb Dov Ber, the Maggid, turns to him and says, "For this, you have to go visit my student, Reb Ze'ev of Zhytomyr. Zhytomyr is a city in Ukraine. You have to go see him." So he packs his bags and he immediately embarks on the journey to Ukraine. It was the middle of winter. It was a very cold winter. He traveled for several days and several nights, and he arrived in Zhytomyr shortly after midnight. The weather was many, many degrees below zero. It was an ice and a snow all over the city. He was frozen. He was simply frozen, shivering. He sees one home is lit, and he immediately runs to that home. And to his happiness, he can see between the shutters Reb Zhev of Zhytomyr sitting bent over a book and studying. So he immediately knocks on the door. No response. He knocks again. No one is answering. He knocks and he knocks and he knocks. An hour goes by, 2 hours go by. Reb Zhev is sitting and learning right there a few feet away and refuses to open the door. This is a student of the Maggid? A lowlife wouldn't act like this. He's about to fall dead, frozen, and this man is not opening the door. When the sun begins to rise, suddenly Reb Zhev stands up, opens the door. "Shalom Aleichem! How are you? I haven't seen you for such a long time." Welcomes him. He sees a man is frozen. He begins giving him towels and warming him up. He puts him in the bedroom, and this person was shivering from the traveling and from the all night. He gives him hot water. And anyway, for 2 days, he just had to lay in bed to rest up, to calm down. After that, Reb Zev gave him everything he needed, eating and drinking and accommodations, and it was wonderful. You would never think that this person wouldn't let him in the whole first night. And he's there for a week. Finally, he turns to Reb Zev. He says, "You know why I'm here?" So he looks at him. He doesn't answer. He says, "I'm here, and I'm sure you don't know, but I'll tell you why I'm here. I came to the Rebbe. I asked him, how does a person gain control over his own life? And the Rebbe said, for that, you have to go see my student, Reb Zev of Zhytomyr. So here I am. Maybe you can tell me." Ah, Reb Zev said, "That? I already told you. Right when you came, I told you." He says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Is a person a master over himself any less than he is a master over his own home? And you see that in your own home, whoever you want, you let in. And whoever you don't want, you don't let in." He says, "You see, the very first night you came, I tried to articulate that message. The knocking goes on and on and on. You don't have to open the door. You don't have to open the door." So a person has that nefesh habamis. A person that has that ego which can threaten to distance him from the Almighty, to distance him from his true divine self, to distance him from his purpose in life. Yeah, we have that. But you don't have to open the door. You don't have to open your mind, your mouth, your hands, your limbs and organs to allow themselves to be dominated by it. But in order to do that, we have to have a clarity. We have to have a clarity of what's right, what's wrong, who we are, who we are not, what do we want in life, what we don't want in life. And then, Alter Rebbe says, every person can achieve this state of mind, this state of heart. That in every situation, he can live a life which is consistent and which constitutes his own true good and his own true self. Have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichel Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichel Menachem at 718-633-1076.